Welcome to this podcast from Barlow McCarthy. We hope you find insight and a catalyst for change in the topics we discuss. Now here is today's presentation.
Good day, everyone. I have the pleasure of talking with today Mary Beth Ray, who brings to her coaching clients the best of her 30-year career, leading nonprofits, practicing law, and managing teams. She specializes in coaching leaders and teams, including nonprofits, law firms, companies, and universities, and was one of my faculty in the Rutgers coaching program. Mary Beth brings to her coaching her expertise and certification in DISC, driving forces, and EQ assessments. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is the use of those assessments and how they can help each one of us as we develop as leaders. Welcome, Mary Beth.
Thank you, Allison. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you with me and to talk about this. We learned a lot about assessments, and you and I have worked together doing some assessments for some clients. So as you look at the use of these assessments, how do they best support leadership development? Why are they important and useful?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way that I think of these assessments overall is that they're like an operating manual. And wouldn't it be great if everybody had an operating manual on each other? Because it would really help reduce conflict. And that's what we have with these assessments. So the DISC is important in measuring behavior and perceived behavior and how we communicate with others. The driving forces assessment measures motivators and really helps us get at core values. And then EQ is measuring the five aspects even of emotional intelligence. So if you think of the DISC as the tip of the iceberg that's observable, we're looking at that behavior and perceived behavior, whereas the driving forces in EQ are really helping us get below the surface. And this is all part of deepening our self-awareness, which of course is the first step to change, which is what coaching is all about. So, you know, I think the bottom line is for you to become a leader, you have to grow. And to grow, you have to change. And to change, you have to have self-awareness. And that's what these assessments do for us.
Right. And understanding how the way you are and the way you're wired and the way you built interacts with other people who may or may not be oriented in the same way you are. And it's one of the things I probably learned most strongly about DISC was understanding myself, but more importantly, understanding how I interacted with others who were on a different side of the DISC profile. So I know you do this with teams. Can you talk about the benefit of doing DISC on a team of people?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you're right, Allison. I think, you know, once you gain that understanding, it's not just for yourself, but it's how you interact with others. And so that's exactly what I'm building on when I'm doing a team assessment. So we start by doing an individual debrief, which is about an hour and a half. And then we come together later as a team and, you know, we're able to understand each other's strengths and, you know, ways of communicating. And so I think the short way that I would answer your question is these team assessments is understanding ourselves, understanding others, and appreciating the differences. So it's not just there's one right way or one wrong way or, you know, that a team should all be, you know, alike. In fact, you know, vive la difference, you know, it's really the best teams are diverse in many ways. And, you know, one of which is a diversity of DISC profiles. So I think one of the things that we learn in the DISC is how we communicate on a good day and then how we communicate on a bad day. And so sometimes these are blind spots for people. We like to think about how we are perhaps, you know, inspiring or goal-oriented or results-driven on a good day. But sometimes there's an overextension of that. And on a bad day with stress or fatigue, that can look like bossiness or really, you know, almost disrespect for other people on the team or haste. And so by looking at this in the context of other people on the team, it can really help you, you know, deepen that self-awareness and lean into strengths and perhaps delegate to other people on the team, particularly when they're areas that are not your strengths. One of the things that we use is the wheel. Would you like me to talk about the wheel? Or
sure, yeah, talk about the wheel.
Okay. So the wheel is a great tool for coaching teams. And we can plot on the wheel people's natural and adapted styles. And we can, what I love to do is talk through a specific example of a project, say, that went really well, or perhaps a project that did not work well. And how could that project have gone differently, you know, had people had a better understanding of communication styles of other leaders? We can also see whether team members are adapting to a leader's style, which can, in some cases, create quite a bit of stress for a team. And the other thing that I love about the wheel is that we can see where there are gaps on the team, which perhaps could inform hiring decisions to bring in some more diversity. So, for example, I have a wonderful team that I'm working with. They're all very high I and high S. So they're very much relators. They're lovely people who enjoy each other's company, but there is literally no one on the team who is a high D. And so this is a team that really struggles with prioritization and attention to deadlines and being results driven. And so it would be great if they had an opportunity to recruit someone who perhaps brought that greater sense of urgency and results to the team.
Right, right. And in our world, in the physician relations recruitment world, I can see the benefit of it if you're going to recruit, you know, another primary care doctor into a practice and you have a sense of what the other personalities are already. Is there something that would best complement? Or, you know, it's someone to lead a group of surgeons. They're probably going to need to be a high D anyway, but are there some other pieces you're looking for besides that D that would work best in leading? So I think there's lots of different ways that DIS becomes so beneficial in the work that, you know, lots of organizations do, but certainly in healthcare, really understanding that personality piece.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. And, you know, thinking about the stress and just, you know, pressure cooker environment that people in the healthcare field experience, you know, I think that's a great example of how understanding how we communicate on a good day and a bad day can just really, you know, help inform how we interact with each other and help to manage conflict. So yeah, it's a great example.
Yeah. If we think, you know, about the world at large, there's lots of chatter about employee retention being a great challenge right now. The research shows that organizations with high employee engagement actually show lower retention challenges. So engaging with others means you understand their motivators when you're working with them. So talk about that piece of this three-part assessment.
Yeah, Allison, that's such a great point. And certainly as we're coming back from COVID, people really do have a whole different approach to work. I have a client who is an executive director of a nonprofit, and she said, you know, I haven't been working from home. I've been sleeping in my office. Wow. And I thought that really sums up the extreme situation that we've been in. And as you say, you know, the less engaged employees are, the more likely they are to say enough already and, you know, move on to a different job. And so you're absolutely right. You know, engaging with employees is more important than ever. And deepening our understanding of what motivates them can be a great way to engage with employees. I was looking back at some statistics on retention, and studies show that people need to hear 3 to 5 positive points of feedback to each point of negative feedback. And 65% of employees receive no positive recognition at work. And 32% of employees, only 32% of employees are fully engaged. Now, those reports are from Gallup and they go back to 2017. So imagine what those numbers look like now.
Yeah. Yep.
It's going to be, you know, I'm sure the scientists are, you know, putting those numbers together. I haven't seen more recent data, but I'm sure it's going to be even more, you know, disengagement. So motivators. So we look at motivators in the driving forces assessment, which is one of the 3 assessments that I am credentialed to administer. And the motivators are what get you excited about getting out of bed in the morning. So it's really the why of your actions. And so once you know the motivations that drive your actions, then you're more able to understand the causes of conflict. Once you understand the why of your actions, and then you combine that with coaching, you can really change your life. It's a really powerful tool. So I think, you know, there's some great questions that I ask when I'm talking about driving forces with a client. And I think that inquiry is so important to how we co-partner with our clients to help understand what they really want to work on, what they want to change. So part of deepening that understanding of motivators is really exploring values. So what do you love about your job? What do you hate about your job? Describe the best day at work. Describe the worst day at work. And explore your ideal environment. And once we do that, that's actually part of the driving forces assessment report that comes back from TTI, is your ideal environment. Then I ask a client, are you on the right bus? Because if they're not fulfilling these motivators, then they may not be on the right bus.
Exactly. And as you were talking about that engagement piece, and the questions that you just gave are great examples of questions we can ask employees. You may phrase it a little bit differently, but really getting to know them. Again, in our world, those are great questions to ask physicians that you're working with. So it's about getting to know them deep enough so that there's a level of engagement together. And then you better understand how to interact with each other, because you know what drives them or what hinders them. And as you said, also the environment in which they thrive in or not thrive in. Terrific insight. And whether we do the assessment or not, those are questions that we can be asking everybody we work with to better understand each other.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's so true. And, you know, another tool that I'll use with clients is, I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the work of Brené Brown. I know you and I are both big fans of Brené. She has a list of values on her website. And that's something that I'll share with clients and ask them to identify what are their top 10 values, and then can they narrow it down to their top five, and then narrow it down even further to their top two. And then let's talk about those two values and how they are either living those values or not, and how can they get more of those values into their lives. So great, powerful tool for helping clients really discover their potential and lead more fulfilled lives.
Right,
right, right, exactly. So the other piece of the assessment that you do is emotional intelligence, which includes, you know, how much we're aware of and can regulate our own emotions, but also understand, you know, those, the emotions and interactions with others we have to influence. How does someone develop their emotional intelligence skills? We talk about how that's one part that can change. You can change that and grow those pieces. So how do you do that?
Yeah, what a great question. And, you know, let me just start by saying you can grow your EQ. For the most part, your, DISC and driving forces profiles don't change a lot during your lifetime unless there's a significant event. For me, changing from practicing law to coaching actually did change my DISC profile quite a bit, which was interesting. But for the most part, DISC and driving forces tend to stay fairly steady during your lifetime. But EQ can grow, and there's been a lot of scientific research around neuroplasticity, which is our brain's ability to develop new neural connections. And they are, Daniel Goleman, who is kind of the father of EQ, if you will, has really advocated for teaching EQ in elementary schools, because it is something that we can start to grow, even with young children. But, you know, back to the kind of the EQ and more of a coaching arena, there are five aspects of EQ. And so what I encourage people to do is, as they go through their assessment, there's a score for each of those five. So the first is self-awareness. The second is self-regulation. The third is motivation. And then the last two are social awareness and social regulation. And so clients can go through and identify not necessarily their lowest score, but something that they really want to work on. And so an example for each of these would be, for self-awareness, when am I experiencing an emotion? When is the emotion very intense? When is it not so intense? What's the cause, the trigger of that emotion? So, for example, when the intensity of happiness is low, then that the emotion might be contented or pleased. But then when the intensity is high, it might be ecstatic or overjoyed. When an emotion is fear, then a low intensity might be nervous or cautious, but the high intensity might be terrified or frantic. And so helping the client with inquiry into understanding, when am I experiencing that? What's the trigger? What are the patterns and trends, really helps a client deepen their self-awareness. So self-regulation has been described as the fire and the brakes. And so some of the strategies that I experiment with clients around that would be breathing or meditation or exercise or journaling. So there's actually an app that I love. And so for deepening self-awareness and self-regulation, I suggest that clients download an app called the Mood Meter. M-O-O-D, Mood Meter. It's actually put out by the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. I think it's 99 cents a month. And it's just a great way to help clients begin to track their emotions and spot those trends and causes, you know, ultimately get more control over how they react in a given situation. And, you know, why is that important? Because if your team doesn't know how you're going to react, or your colleagues or your boss, if they don't know how you're going to react, it's very hard to trust. And so this predictability is a very important dimension of leadership and building trust with your team. So I can go on to some other examples if you want me to go into empathy or social regulation, but let me just pause there and see, get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's, again, it's just building that repertoire of knowing ourselves better, knowing what our reactionary tendencies are. And, you know, even if it's not yourself, understanding the language of this, I think, helps us to understand others so much better, right? If our boss is reactionary, well, can I start to really look at those trends of when I see my boss react? What are those triggers? Okay, how do I avoid those triggers? Or how do I manage those triggers in my boss? Similarly with, again, physicians, because we work with them so closely, it's similar. What is going to be their trigger points? What are, you know, how do I manage that within myself? How do I not become reactionary when they're reactionary? Using that to become better aware of my place in this. And so that leads me to ask you, Mary Beth, about empathy and the importance of empathy in being able to build trust and being able to build relationships. Can you comment on that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, the examples that you just gave are absolutely on point. And, you know, I think empathy is really at the core of powerful leadership. One thing that I work with clients on is those, you know, increasing their skills of observation. There's actually a great book called Visual Intelligence by Amy Herman. And I've recommended that to a number of clients who, particularly clients who are just, you know, the top of their game when it comes to technical skill, but who are perhaps, you know, have some opportunity for growth in social awareness and empathy. And, you know, one of the points that Herman makes in that book is that just by, you know, really opening your eyes and ears and observing, you can really grow that empathy muscle. And one of the tools that I use is actually having people go to a museum and look at paintings, or, well, of course, we can do that online now. But, you know, I'll pull up a painting, you know, share the screen on a Zoom call and have them observe expressions on faces and body language and what else is happening in the room to really help people learn what to look for and how to read the room, because that is just such a key skill to connecting and engaging with your employees and also managing up with your boss, as you were saying earlier, working with physicians.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion, because we always, you know, in this world, we always feel like we need to be doing. And so much of building our leadership capabilities is observing, active listening, just being so much more aware of how others are reacting to us and how can we adapt ourselves to be able to influence others more effectively. So it leads me to the last question, Mary Beth, which is, when we're working with clients on some of these skills and some of these things that come out in the assessment, it can be a vulnerable place for people to spot to be in. And maybe the first time they've really actually started to bring a window into themselves, and it can become uncomfortable. So when you're doing this work with others, or even for somebody who's thinking about coaching, but kind of squeamy about what are we going to get into here? How do you encourage people to be open to it and live in that vulnerability?
Yeah, such an important question. And, you know, I think that's where that's kind of that secret sauce to coaching is partnering with your client and letting them know that this is hard work, but it's important work and that you're there to support them. So I think it starts with the presence, you know, that we bring to the table as coaches. And then, you know, really putting all of this into context. So, you know, the assessments are a diagnostic tool, and it's really to increase understanding of an individual's talents and how to align them. And our goal is to reveal human potential. So, you know, the language in the report, some of the language may sound, you know, a little judgmental. You know, for example, there's a section on time wasters. Well, nobody likes to be, you know, considered a time waster, but these reports are not meant to be judgment. They're really meant to deepen self-awareness. And so what is it about these time wasters that I can learn about? How can I manage those and, you know, lean into my strengths and minimize my weaknesses? So the reports are not going to be 100% accurate. You know, we go through the report and I invite clients to identify what resonates with them and also what doesn't resonate. And in some cases, there may be something in the report that a client disagrees with, and that's okay. And we can either just carve that out and say, you know what, that's not me. The report got it wrong. Or we can treat it as a potential blind spot and think about, you know, well, who could I speak with, who I trust, who might, you know, be willing to say, hey, you know, I've seen that too. And so I think it's kind of an invitation to people to explore whether it is a potential blind spot. But, you know, ultimately, as I said, these are tools of assessments are really like an operating manual or maybe even a translator of a foreign language. And so if we can learn a few words of, you know, our colleagues' languages and speak that, then they're more likely to hear us. And so I think it really is as hard as it can be to get some of this feedback. It can really be an invitation to invite people to explore their potential.
Right. And I think that as we consider leadership, the higher we go, the more we have to rely on how we influence than what we do. Managers are much more of the doers, right? And we learn how to get things done. We learn financials, we learn operations, we learn marketing. You know, we learn those tactical things. But then the higher up we go, the less we're doing stuff and the more we're influencing others. And that's why I think these assessments are so powerful, because we better understand our abilities to do that, where we're strong in that, where we need to grow some more to be better at it. And it's a professional development area that kind of feels soft and not tangible, not the hard skills that we've been taught. You may get your MBA and you get taught all those tactical things, but there's so much more about leadership that's beyond that, which is where I think all these pieces go.
Oh, absolutely. I think you put your finger on it, Allison. And, you know, if, you know, as you say, moving from those skills up to influence, that's where the emotional intelligence can really, you know, make or break a future leader.
Exactly. Exactly. And how many leaders you and I have probably both known that smart people knew how to do the work, but it was their inability to understand themselves and how they were interacting with others that was their biggest shortcoming. So it's such a huge piece of leadership development. Mary Beth, thank you again. Really appreciate it.
It's been great to see your your coaching career take off. And I know that you bring so much value to your clients, Allison. So I'm really pleased to partner with you on this podcast and just pleased and proud to see how you're serving your clients.
Thank you. And I will be sure when we send out this podcast to our recipients that your contact information is on there. So if folks have an interest in being in touch with you about the assessments or coaching or whatever, they'll be able to do that. So thanks again, Mary Beth. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Allison.